hear that tune, and you know what it means. We're heading in the garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. It's Thursday afternoon here on KFSK, and we've got to talk about gardening. Before we dive into the conversation, let's say thank you to the flower farm out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. Every day but Wednesday, open 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. with delivery available, even in the evenings. With bouquets by the jar or subscription available, colorful dahlias and a lot more. 772-3464 for the flower farm. And as we pull up Ed Byarski on the phone here, I want to remind listeners they can join in on our conversation with a question if they have some pressing concern or major curiosity that they want some perspective on from Master Gardener Ed Byarski. Feel free during the program to call on in, 772-3808. And with that, we'll pull up the phone here and say hello to Ed Byarski. Are you out there, Ed?
I'm here, Oren.
All right. Welcome. Welcome indeed.
Good to be here and just taking a little break indoors from the action, and weather is improving slightly. And like I mentioned earlier, the pressure is rising, which, as far as I can tell, that just means we have more weather coming of some sort.
Yes. Yeah, it's a nice day for working outside today around here, too. But there is more moisture in the forecast. What a midsummer it has been, eh?
Yeah, I hear we're at the second wettest summer on record, and chances are pretty darn good that we might break that record. So what happens there? But there's weird stuff happening out here in the gardens. A couple of things yesterday, that squirrels are eating my cherries.
Wow.
Down there in... Not to mention everything else is eating the cherries, too, although we don't have... I've been lucky enough not to have bears, but the birds of all sorts are also... And usually they have been leaving them alone in past years. But from everything I've heard and seen, there are a few wild berries. So that's happening. That's not such an unusual thing. But then we'll throw out an even kind of stranger one, is that I have wild blueberry plants blooming. And or starting out with flower buds, getting ready to bloom. And that's, maybe they think it's springtime.
Wow. It has been a kind of a wintry July. And boy, so new bloom on the blueberries. That is strange.
It is. I mean, I've seen rhododendrons occasionally, actually normally a little bit later than this, like into late August and even September, putting on some blossoms. Maybe that's going to happen too, again, because of the type of weather we're having. I don't know. So that's an interesting one. It's just weird little bits and pieces of stuff that are, you know, the reaction to, I suppose, the weather we're having. You know, the lace leaf broccoli that I'm growing, thanks to the flood. You know, they're out there ferociously munching away. And yeah. Then I also noticed some lace leaves on some of my young apple trees, and from a distance, got up closer, and they were just covered with tiny woolly bear caterpillars.
Oh.
So, boy, that's, you know, and it's about the right time of year for that, but the sheer numbers of them were ridiculous. I mean, there were like 5 to 10 per leaf. Little tiny ones, quarter inch long or so.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh! That's
hey, beware! They're coming to a garden near you.
Yeah. Wow, that's a that's nightmarish. What's a good reaction to a bloom of those pests like that?
Well, there weren't that many trees, at least, so I was just out there squishing them by hand with my fingers, and then washed up carefully afterwards. But that would be something I need to look around a bit more and probably have my soap spray handy for hitting those particularly. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, they were really thick last fall. So, again, so what apparently means is that they are finally, they've emerged from their cocoons that were, they were tucked in everywhere, underneath, and all over the place. I mean, I had them in the corners of doorways and other sort of stuff where the woolly bears like, climbed up, and that's where they pupated and stuff. So, again, the caution is that the spines, the hairs on them are very irritating, can cause serious irritation and even to allergic reaction for young and tender folks and even more mature folks like me. So be cautious if you're handling or doing that, squishing them by hand or come back. They aren't fast movers, you know, so you can probably go and grab your squirt bottle or something like that. Take care of them. That's the other thing, too, I suppose. I've got my the other squirt bottle, not the soap spray, but the ammonia water spray handy. It's actually sitting right there underneath a cabbage plant waiting for me to go out each evening and try to thin the herd again. So, again, being ready for that. Those are the, I think, the main things I've seen right now in insect tests. Mm-hmm. Although I've been mentioning aphids in certain places on lupin plants, among others, outside at least.
Yeah.
Checking in the greenhouses, however, would be very important too to see. Again, this is a great time of year for the aphids on, I mean, the ones I've had the most problem on have been on cucumber plants. And I've been looking and watching for them, not seeing any yet, I hope. And we'll, again, keep track of that. But again, looking at your plants in the greenhouse and again removing the moldy leaves turning brown, which may turn moldy. Again, I'm seeing that on the lower leaves and leaves that have some of those that are just kind of sticking out over the paths where I brush past them, and I suppose I'm kind of breaking or bruising leaves. And the other thing I'm seeing on cucumber plants, particularly the tips, which if the cucumber plant has, you know, gets condensation on it, which is, happens pretty often with cool evening, high moisture content and cool evenings, you know, you feed in the morning, see the moisture right on the edges, beads of droplets of dew on the edges of the leaves, that the tips where the moisture drops off seems to be the place where the fungus starts to grow first.
Right.
And it's really distinctive right now. You know, you're seeing the brown patches right there on the tips of the cucumber leaves. So, again, monitor that. And, again, that may be something, again, where we need to have a bucket in the greenhouse where you remove all those browning leaves or yellowing leaves or moldy leaves, get them into there, and then get rid of them.
Right, because that's kind of contagious a bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and again, well, our walking through, if we brush past those plants, which leaves, which have mold spores on them, I mean, we can certainly be stirring them up into the air because they're very light and move around. But we can also be transferring them on our clothing, on our hands, again, too, if we're walking through there. So just being careful of that and just trying to do the cleanup. And again, the ventilation, the air movement is so important now. Of course, last Sunday we had, when it was blowing and raining, buckets and wheelbarrows and among other things, we got, well, 1 to 3 inches of rain, depending on which part of Juneau you lived in. It was also really blowing from 20 to 50 here. So, I mean, my hoop house and greenhouse were kind of like a wind tunnel. Mm-hmm. There was some serious ventilation.
I guess that kind of cancels it out if the plants can withstand the
right.
The wind speeds.
Exactly, yeah. And then, of course, the other issue with that is I've got, well, my corn, it's a sad state of affairs. But still, some of it is tasseling, and there's about 4 or 5 ears with silk showing. Corn is wind-pollinated, so I figure some of that corn, you know, if you've got corn in Petersburg, it could have been pollinated by mine. I guess it's blowing the wrong way. It was other... I guess it would be a Haynes corn that might have been.
Yeah.
It was blowing southeasterly, and it was howling here.
Yeah, so again, yeah. We had some wind over the weekend, too. I think I watched some potato stems snap in the wind out the windows.
Yeah, exactly. And not to mention other tall plants, foxgloves and other assorted plants. So, but with the weather we're having, you know, cool, moist weather, it really is good time of year for planting and transplanting if there's trees and shrubs in pots that haven't gotten in the ground yet. This is a great time of year for that. It's really a little too early for transplanting of those. I would, if you have some that need to be moved to a better place, better to wait till late September when the trees, the shrubs are starting to go dormant, and then move them. And even into October, we can be moving them. Soil stays warm for quite a long time. Roots will be growing as long as the ground is not frozen. So for transplanting, for dividing and transplanting of perennials, this is a great time of year for that. For those that have already bloomed, everything from the primroses and the iris and the troleus and other stuff. Probably the only one I wouldn't move now would be peonies. That would be one, again, to wait, kind of like with the trees and shrubs, wait till late September and October for moving those.
So for trees and peonies, you want to wait until they're more entirely dormant, but for a lot of other perennials that have bloomed, this is a good time to be out there dividing.
Yes.
And
it really is. And what we can do too, this time of year, they can still be, we can dig up the whole clump or we can dig up half a clump. Part of it was I was salvaging hostas. This past week, I mean, we dug up a truck full of hostas, and we're splitting them up to be moved, and this also gives us a great opportunity to pull out the weeds that had grown into the clumps. So that's a good thing. Getting them back in the ground, getting them watered, of course, and then Mother Nature can, if Mother Nature doesn't take care of the watering, we can hope. Maybe we'll have to do some of our own watering, and that's a good thing. But again, putting in some compost into the soil at the same time, and that can help improve the odds for good flowering for next year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. That sounds good. So dividing, adding in compost when the freshly cleaned up and divided perennials are replanted. Sounds good.
Yep. It'll really help. I mean, it really helps. It's a great time of year that, again, you know, along with the soil being relatively warm, soil microorganisms and the worms, good grief, today we were digging up perennials. I was doing exactly that, digging them up to be transplanted because we're completely digging up new beds, making new beds. And there's grass in these, and there's other assorted weeds that are coming out. So it's really a good time for that. But yeah, some big worms, and they're near the surface, considering the high moisture levels. And it's good to see them, and it's good to keep encouraging them. And again, the more compost we mix in, that they like the organic matter to break down, and let's make stuff grow better. And then let's start, if we have bare ground, say we've harvested, say folks have harvested, in my case, certainly I've got lots of empty boxes where the garlic has come out. I'm working in compost, working in horse manure, working in, and even planting cover crop seeds on some of these, so that we're improving the beds for next year's garden vegetables, which will be planted. So again, if you've got some compost, stuff that didn't compost well, didn't break down fully, maybe you can just keep turning it to make that stuff work some more. But you can also work it into the garden, bury it in trenches in the garden, and again, let the soil critters work on it and break it down. And again, they will then make it better, ready for plants to use next spring.
Nice. That is a good chore to add to the list right around now. You know, when you're out there, shovel in hand and all the rest, working on the soil for next year.
The other thing too is it's right now, hopefully everybody's got their garlic out of the ground. I've got all mine out and it's curing. But preparing ground, if you've got some empty spaces where the garlic's going to go in, again, mixing in that compost and manure and other stuff in there to help it start breaking down before planting garlic later on in September and October.
Nice.
And speaking of, well, I guess we'll throw this one out there too, and I can try to get information to you once we firm up the timing. But where in the past years we have done the Juneau Garden Club has sponsored a garlic lovers potluck in person with all sorts of tasty garlic dishes of everything, from salad to spaghetti sauce and pickled garlic and garlic chocolate chip cookies and garlic chocolate cake and other stuff. Looks like that's not going to happen together. We aren't going to get together this year, except we may do a virtual garlic presentation. And so that is, we're still working on details. It's likely to be around mid-September. And it's the sort of thing where I suspect it'll happen like we did the virtual garden conference last spring, where folks can sign up and then get the link to that. I will try to get that information to you when we get close to that.
That sounds great. That sounds fun and informative. Looking forward to it.
So a virtual garlic, I don't know, whatever we're going to have to call it yet, but we'll come up with something.
Yeah. So you have garlic curing everywhere right now, eh?
Oh, it is. Yes, it's looking good. I mean, the stuff that I ended up sorting out a fair amount out. We've been eating garlic. I've been giving away garlic. I carry garlic in my truck with me everywhere. And so there's no vampires following me either. But yes, the garlic is looking really good this year, and that too is something that we're a group of us are getting together and letting folks know that we have available.
Nice.
I saw that Farragut Farms looks like they've got some wonderful garlic available.
Yeah, I've seen photos of theirs, and they brought the first couple of sort of fresh, uncured heads of garlic into town during their last visit, and it sounds like they've had a really good crop, so that's exciting.
Yes, it is. It is. They're some of the biggest. I mean, I've been weighing a few of my biggest, and bigger than ever. Up to a few bulbs that reach 5 ounces for a single bulb. I mean, they are pretty massive, pretty impressive.
Wow. What have you thought about, like, why are they doing so good this year? Is it that they like the cold, or is it just year after year they keep getting better just from smart choosing?
Yeah, and part of it is selection. So it's something that we should be doing if we're saving our own, which I do and others do too, is we're trying to choose the biggest and best to replant. And in that way, we can help increase the odds. My friend Joe Orsi and I know Bo and Maria also talk about selecting the bulbs, select big bulbs, but also select for multiple cloves per bulb, because there are some varieties of garlic that will have these two, I mean, I've had it with just two huge cloves versus a bulb of garlic that has 4 or 5 big cloves.
Mm.
And want to be, for just eating those with just for fun, but if we want to be replanting, then you dig up one garlic bulb and it only has 2 cloves to replant, so you need to save 50% of your stock for replanting. Where if you get 4 or 5, then you only need to save, assuming you're planting the same amount again for next year, only need to be saving 20 to 25%. That way you can hopefully sell garlic and eat garlic while still having enough left over.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That makes good sense. Right. That is a consideration about which bulbs to save for planting. I hadn't really thought about that, but sure, of course. You want both multiple cloves and nice big robust cloves too.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a kind of an odd thing that happens. You know, we keep talking about garlic and planting hardneck garlic is growing better for us here. Hmm. Occasionally, there's the odd one that does not send up a scape. They end up being a soft neck garlic. And, I mean, when we go to pull them up from the beds, we can feel the difference. What I've seen is those, because they're not putting up a scape, tend to be larger yet. I mean, that's where some of these record-breaking, for me at least, size bulbs come from. And I've talked to some of the others, other folks here in town too, who have taken those and thinking, okay, well, boy, if we can grow these, you know, these big bulbs with big cloves and not have scapes, then it saves us time. The plant is not using energy to make that, so giving us bigger ones. The results of that have been fair to poor. No, because I tried that on with one batch. I had a dozen cloves from two bulbs that were soft-neck. And out of all of those, only two were soft-neck this year. So maybe just continual selection is going to be needed on that. But it's like it's reverted back to the more normal form. Just an interesting thing if we're out there working in the garden and trying to find, make, breed, select for something new, different, more productive, hopefully.
Yeah, wow, that's an interesting interesting concept there. I haven't heard of that before. Hardneck garlic just kind of sort of mutating to not have a clove that way, but nice though. Sounds like a really interesting selection project. Was the survival good generally on cloves planted from that non-scaping garlic from last year?
Yes, the survival was good. And so here I'm sitting in my kitchen looking up. The other kind of fun thing is that, at least temporarily, we can braid those bulbs with the stems attached. Where hardneck doesn't braid very well, for obvious reasons. Hard to wind it in and out and around if you're crazy. But again, I've got 8 bulbs hanging up over my stove, which is temporary. I'm not going to keep them. I'm going to be saving and replanting them. But again, they are nice and big, and it was just cool. This truly is the first time I've ever raided garlic on my own. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of fun too. And again, I suppose it's also a marketing ploy. It looks nice. Down south, we've seen huge 20 and 30 bulb strings down in Gilroy, California. And yeah, they're gorgeous.
Certainly.
So,
yeah.
Folks, know what happens next year.
Well, be sure to let us know about how they pass the taste test, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll definitely do that because there'll probably be a few small cloves out of each bulb that don't get planted. So we can taste those.
Interesting to see change happen like that. Certainly.
You know, and that's a big part of just observing what's happening in your garden. So if you see something different, and you know it's something that, of course, breeders are doing deliberately. Luther Burbank did it deliberately. Well, initially, I think it was somewhat random. You know, when he was just collecting the little seed balls, they look like tomatoes. Look like little green tomatoes on the potato plant. They're both have seeds in them. They're a fruit. And initially he started just planting the seeds and seeing what would happen from that. And again, then you can do some deliberately crossing varieties, again, to try to change, to try to find new and better varieties or select for some special characteristics. So again, like I'm doing it with the garlic here, I have done it with the selecting from the bolting spinach, overwintering spinach plant, and I'm getting ready to plant spinach into one of my hoop house beds, and probably some radishes are going to go in also. So hopefully we'll get some radishes this fall and some spinach that will overwinter. Maybe it'll, who knows what kind of a fall we're going to have. Maybe we'll have spinach this fall to eat.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be just fine.
You know, got to have something different to go with the kale that just keeps growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, good old kale. Really keeps one's spirits up when other crops don't show up during a wintry summer like this one.
Right. I mean, kale, right now I've got kale, which was, well, let's see. It was the kale seeds which dropped off the kale plants last year when I was harvesting. So now some of those kale plants are flowering. So those kale flowers, of course, those can be tossed into salads. They're a nice, colorful addition. And actually, they're rather sweet, too, if you eat, you know, pick off and eat individual kale flowers. They have some sweetness. There's some nectar in there. And they're a real hot item for the bees, too. So they really enjoy that.
Nice.
So if I don't pick them all off, there'll be more seeds. But I just found a couple more quarts of seed left over from last year and the year before and the year before that. So I'm never going to run out of kale seeds.
That's true. So for say, for example, I wanted to harvest kale seeds from some of my kale that's going right now. For it to, I let the kale that's in the ground overwinter grow again, and then it would go to seed next fall.
Normally, yes, or next summer, yes. So these the seeds dropped. Some of the plants are not flowering. Some of them may flower later on in the season, although those may or may not flower early enough to mature their seed pods. So these, if I wasn't picking them off to eat, some of them have already formed pods. Just depends on how big the plant is, too, it seems like. But sometimes we'll get really small ones that will also do that. So you'll see the plants themselves, the plant will quit flowering. You see these long, narrow, very narrow, I mean, they're only like two millimeters in diameter pods that are on the plants. And so there you want to watch those pods gradually turn brown to mature. And the challenge, of course, is with our moist weather, is getting them to do that maturing and not, and you've got to be there to harvest that. Sometimes you'll have to harvest the plant earlier, just when the lower ones are done blooming, and maybe you'll have to bring them inside or put them in. And what I've done is, when I get a bunch of them that are fairly mature, I'll harvest the plants, take the main part of the seed stems off, and I get so many, literally, I put them in garbage cans.
Yeah.
And they dry out. I'll bash them against, once they're dry, then I bash them against the sides of the garbage cans. The seeds fall apart, the pods open up, the seeds fall out, and then I get down to the bottom and pour out the seeds, sort out, clean out the seeds from that. So, but it's watching your plants, and the other thing that happens, kind of interesting to see, is if those seed pods are ripe, they start to split open a little bit, and of course we get the rain, you end up, the seeds themselves will start sprouting in, the whole crowd of them, in a pod. So you'll have a whole line of little kale seedlings right there in the pod that are sprouting on the plant.
Wow. That's a plant that wants to live.
Oh, yeah. And so, of course, you could plant those and get them in. But by that time, of course, you missed your harvesting opportunity for kale seeds.
Yeah, yeah. So if I want to try that this year, do I just let the kale plant from this summer just go and go and go all winter, or do I cut it back, or how do I set it up to survive the winter the best way?
So what I found is, at least for winter survival, the big plants, you know, and big plants being some of these that may be 2 to 3 feet tall, some of those don't survive the winter too well. Where smaller plants, like if you planted seeds now and got plants that were maybe 6 inches tall to a foot tall by October, and you can just thin them out, eat some of those, and just leave some of those are the ones that are more likely to survive than the big plants. That's been my experience. You know, you know. And then once they get the certain amount of temperature and day length next year, then those would, then they will get the stimulation to flower and form seeds.
Okay. Nice. Sounds good. Well, lots to think about. Any parting thoughts before we call it a show? And
The one other thing to be doing right now, particularly in the greenhouses, hoop houses, whatever, is, and I'm talking to other folks about squash blossoms, zucchinis rotting on the vine. Get out there and clean them off. You know, same thing. As soon as you see a female flower with a fruit forming on it, and it's about the next day or the day after that, assuming they get pollinated, that they're starting to grow, then gently remove the flower, the spent flower, so that it doesn't get moldy and then cause mold into the plant. Because I've seen a lot of that on my own plants and on others. It's what happens because those spent flowers are really, really sensitive to mold. So if you keep that off, then you can hopefully keep producing more squash, more zucchini. And even it doesn't hurt if you've got more so cucumbers. There, especially if you've got them trellised or staked or strung up, you can kind of shake those plants, trying to remove so that the little flowers again will fall off the fruits which are forming for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, good point. Say with like zucchinis or squash, what do you look for to know that, okay, this is fertilized, it doesn't need this flower anymore?
Well, usually if there's multiple, usually you'll have unopened flowers on the stems, as which are out a little ways farther out on the on the main plant. And then you'll see some that have flowered, maybe just flowered yesterday, and then you see some that are obviously going to flower in the next few days. So look at the sizes of those fruits. So, and again, pollination, truly 2 days after they were open and have started to shrivel, you move them either way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Them at any rate. And again, if you see some that already have mold growing into them, cut them off. And maybe you'll be able to salvage part of the zucchini on those, you know, if you slice it up or something like that, mm-hmm. or in salads or sauteing, whatever you use them. So it's an eternal vigilance issue with those. You've got to be out there pretty much every day checking to help them out.
Right. Help them fertilize and then help them survive.
Yes, exactly.
Nice. Okay, that's a great tip to leave people with. Okay, well, thank you, Ed, for being with us and sharing these great considerations. Lots to do, lots to keep an eye on, you know, staving off the mold when the temperatures and conditions are just like this. So cleaning up as we go is a big takeaway from today's show.
Definitely.
Okay, well, thank you for taking the time to be with us, Ed, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, good enough. By then we should have more tomatoes, which, to go along with the theme song, we are starting to eat our tomatoes.
Oh, so good.
One more good thing, finally, late this year.
That's true. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, and more to talk about tomatoes next week, then.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye, Art.
Till then. There you go. That's In the Garden for this week. Master Gardener Ed Byarski sharing his expertise with us here on Thursday afternoons. Always a changing enterprise out in the gardens every week of the season. A little different than the last. And so it's quite a treat to have Ed Byarski sharing his take on best practices and answering our questions as they come up. So big thank you to Ed Byarski for coming through that way. And thanks to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. From out at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. Their phone number is 772-3464. Open 10 till 4 every day but Wednesdays. And delivery available in the evenings too. for their bouquets. Bouquets in jars by subscription too. That's the Flower Farm. Stay tuned for High Country Music. Alec McMurrin, your host, this afternoon.